Putting officer, it's important we look at the facts.
Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.
Hello and welcome to another Planet Holyrood. I'm Paul Hutchin, political editor of the Daily Record. Joining me this week are two of our best political analysts. We've got John Ferguson, who's the political editor of the Sunday Mail, and of course Douglas Dickey of the Scottish Daily Express. So we're 24 hours after the final Tory budget before the general election, whenever that's going to come. 2 points I would make: like all Tory budgets, it benefits Tory voters. And secondly, it has quickly become mired in a disaster. So let's start with oil and gas. Now, at the weekend and last week, the Scottish Tory leader, Douglas Ross, harangued the SNP and Labour over their policies on the North East, particularly support for a windfall tax. He made it clear at the weekend that he did not want the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, to extend the windfall tax. Hunt, in his budget, extended the windfall tax, completely undermining Douglas Ross. So, John, how much of a disaster was this for the Scottish Tory leader?
Yeah, it's certainly very clear that they're not in the, that he's not on the same page as the Chancellor and the Prime Minister. I think pretty clear what's going on here. The Tories in London want to cut taxes for sort of middle income earners, their base voters, and they want to make up some of that money by taxing the big oil and gas companies. That's not so good for Douglas Ross and some other Conservatives that represent areas in the North East. So you can see how they've really come into a bit of bother with this. The interesting thing, I guess, here is that we've got a weird spectacle of the SNP being aligned with the Scottish Conservatives against the Scottish Conservatives' own colleagues in London on the North Sea. So it's a bit of a mess, and it kind of gives the impression that, you know, all of these, all both parties are sort of viewing these things in a very pragmatic way.
Dougie, Jeremy Hunt seemed to antagonise his Scottish Tory colleagues even further in an interview today, where he described the Scottish oil and gas sector as one of the losers in the budget. The Express is well plugged into Tory land. How is this going down with Douglas Ross and his colleagues in the MSP group?
And the Tory group, obviously. Not great. I think there's a feeling that it's such a bizarre decision to have taken at this time. It'd have been such an easy win to just say, oh, we're going to end the windfall tax. It would have secured Tory voters, you know, Tory votes, or could have help protect Tory votes in the north-east of Scotland. I kind of feel like, for the sake of that extra year, why bother with it? You know, I could have cut national insurance. I mean, I think we're all kind of working on the assumption that Jeremy Hunt is not going to be the Chancellor come the end of this year. No Tory is going to be Chancellor by the end of this year. You know, it'd be easy enough to, you know, cut national insurance and just left the windfall tax as it is and kind of let Labour deal with it. It just seems like such a needless row to have get involved in, to have created himself. I think I'm going to give Jeremy Hunt a bit of credit for it. Ultimately, you know, as John said there, this is taxing big oil companies who are making an absolute fortune over, you know, the rising energy prices, to help make things a wee bit easier for, you know, kind of middle earners. I think that's something most people, you know, most voters can probably get on board with. As I said before we started, you've now got the bizarre situation where, you know, the SNP are almost to the right of the Tories on this, because they obviously want to see the windfall tax end when it's scheduled to. But I think Hunt is, you know, he's, regardless what you think of him, and, you know, he's you know, no politician gets everything right, and he obviously has a name that everyone is really careful to say all the time, and it's a bit of a laughing matter. But I think he showed some, you know, big boy politics with us. It maybe would have been easy for him to just give, you know, give the tax cut uncosted, let someone else deal with it. I think he's shown, I think he's a serious guy, I think he's a serious politician, and I think he's wanted to be fiscally prudent. It's quite a cautious move, and but ultimately what it's done is it's created, I mean, there's no, you know, there's no kind of getting away from it. This is an absolute disaster for the Tories in Scotland, an absolute disaster. It's going to cost some votes at the election, certainly in the North East. The, you know, the cynic in me yesterday thought, are we going to see a dramatic U-turn, and then Douglas Ross can say, oh, look, you know, the government listening to Scottish voices, and Jeremy Hunt says after, you know, discussion with my Scottish colleagues, I realise this isn't the best thing. That was my immediate thought. What I'm hearing is, you know, there's absolutely no chance of that. This is going to go through. So it just seems such a needless thing to have done, to have sparked a row in your own party, and it's a complete mess. And you know, Andrew Bowie, I think, I mean, sure, he must be penning his resignation letter. I don't see how he can continue.
He always seems to be penning his resignation letter, but never actually seems to send it in. And Dougie, I mean, a big part of the Scottish Tory general election campaign will be in the North East, holding yeah. those seats and mm-hmm. trying to pick up another couple from the SNP. Do you think that this whole row, the fact that Douglas Ross has not been able to persuade Jeremy Hunt of the merits of scaling back the tax, does this make him look weak and ineffectual?
Yeah, I think it does. I don't think that's necessarily what's happened. As I kind of said there, I think Jeremy Hunt has made a fiscally prudent decision, a decision that's going to be popular elsewhere. But, you know, that's obviously going to be the SNP attack line. And on the surface of it, it doesn't look great. It looks, especially as he went so big on it, Douglas Ross, over the past few months. It's hard to see any other conclusion that he's been undermined badly, and that's going to play really poorly when we do eventually go to the polls, you know, whenever that might be.
John, just to go back to a point that Dougie made, I agree with him on this, about the sort of the weird framing of the oil and gas windfall tax. I mean, over the last couple of weeks, the framing has been that deepening it or extending it is somehow a bad thing. You know, it's bad for the industry, it's bad for jobs. But if you were to ask the average Joe on the street, they'd probably think, hold on, my energy prices have been going up. I'm paying more than ever for gas and electricity. These companies are making an absolute fortune. Why shouldn't they pay a bit more in terms of the windfall tax? So do you not think that deepening the tax will actually be a popular measure?
Yeah, exactly. I think that across the board, this will not be an unpopular move. I think everybody knows that these, you cast your mind back a year or so ago, the energy price cap was going up and up. Energy prices have absolutely rocketed since then. The argument was that without increasing that cap and charging everybody loads more, that all of these companies might somehow go bust. What we've actually seen is that they've been making record profits. They're directly affected, but British Gas, for example, made £700 million. So I think most people are not going to be worried about big oil and gas companies at all. And I think for people in the North East, really, for the SNP and the Conservatives up there, the question they need to be asking themselves is this really going to cost jobs in the grand scheme of things? These companies are going to make their decisions on investments and employment based on, I suspect, much wider and longer term considerations than a 1 year than a one-year windfall tax. I think at the end of the day, they're probably going to accept that, take it on the chin and continue doing what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sceptical of some of the figures that I've seen bandied around. I mean, you would expect industry to sound the alarm in terms of their own interests on this. And John, see if you look at the positions of the three main parties on this. You know, the SNP and the Tories, I think, support a 75% windfall tax. Labour a 78%. I think that now that the Tories are saying that it should be extended to 2029, Labour are saying there or thereabouts. The differences in the positions between all the parties are pretty slender. It's not like a massive difference of principle. They all believe in a windfall tax. It's just like a couple of percentage points here and there.
Yeah, exactly. They're kind of trying to make a play of having different policies when really the policy is pretty much the same. They all accept that these companies have been making loads of money and that they're going to need to pay something back now. But I think you're dead right that it shows how little difference that there are between the parties. I think at the moment, Labour and the Conservatives are simultaneously trying to convince voters that they're prudent and that they're going to invest in public services and that they're going to tax the rich, and at the same time trying to paint themselves as kind of business friendly tax cutters. So there's very little difference between them, and I think that the public can see that.
Dougie, moving on to the main bit of the budget, the national insurance cut, I thought that was the most interesting because they faced a choice. Do they try and cut income tax, which would only apply to taxpayers south of the border, given that it's devolved to Holyrood, therefore Scots would lose out, or do they go for the cheaper national insurance cut, which applies across the UK? And you saw at the Scottish Tory conference, I think Rishi Sunak indicated it would be national insurance and described it as a union tax cut. So they went for 2p off NI. That probably was a victory for the Scottish Secretary Alistair Jack and Douglas Ross, wasn't it? In a way that the oil and gas deepening was not.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Lord giveth on this occasion, he takes away with the, you know, North Sea oil and gas. But this one was certainly one that have pleased Douglas Ross, because I know a lot of Tories were hopeful that it would be income tax that would get cut, because obviously that would then be tied to your personal allowance rather than the tax threshold kind of thing. So, I mean, this is a policy that I think is going to go down pretty well, in all honesty, right across the board, and it does mean it's going to go down well across the UK rather than just maybe south of the border. Everyone likes an extra few quid in their pocket, and you know the figures that have been bandied about are not substantial to households. Is it a wee bit of an election bribe? Well, I mean, all budgets are political. All political parties obviously want to try and attract support. The SNP have done it with the council tax freeze. Tories have went one better with a tax cut. So I think on this occasion the influence of Alistair Jack probably can't be discounted, because I think he will have been in Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak's ear about this to make sure that it is a tax cut across the board, especially at a time when kind of middle earners in Scotland might, you know, with some justification, feel under attack from, you know, Shona Robinson and her own tax increases. So whether it's going to change MD's mind on the vote, I mean, I guess we'll come to that, we'll discuss that later, but I think it's something that, you know, even your hardened anti-Tory punter down the pub might in their quieter moments say, you know what, that wasn't a bad move.
John, I mean, I'll probably take a different view on this one. I mean, where I would agree with Dougie is that people like more money to spend for themselves. They like a higher disposable income. This NI cut will give them that. But if you look at it from a progressive point of view, it's not a great policy, is it? I mean, if you earn 15 grand a year, I think that you probably benefit to the tune of £60 a year. If you're on 100 grand, it's closer to, I think, 750 a year. So, I mean, disproportionately, it's the middle and higher income earners who benefit from this NI cut.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's quite... Everybody will benefit to some degree, but there's absolutely no doubt this is an election giveaway, and it's aimed absolutely at those sort of middle to higher earners that the Conservatives think might, at the end of the day, look at Labour, look at the Conservatives and think, well, these guys are going to put more money in my pocket. It's quite interesting to, I think around the sort of £30,000-£35,000 salary bracket, you'll get about £300 a year extra, which is a reasonable amount, but that jump, that as far as I can see, more than, or just about doubles once you go up to £50,000, £60,000, £70,000. So it's absolutely aimed at Conservative or potential Conservative voters. The other big one was the was moving the point at which you can claim child benefit. Again, this is absolutely hated by a lot of sort of middle earners, people that are probably thinking about who they're going to vote for and could be convinced to vote for the Conservatives. That so people with children potentially losing, you know, £1,000, over £1,000 a year once they got over the £50,000 limit, that's been extended up to £60,000. So that, you know, if you combine those two things, you're potentially going to be putting well over £1,000, maybe getting on to £2,000 into the pockets of people that the Conservatives are going to be absolutely targeting in the election. So it's no surprise what they're up to there. And yeah, the thing about tax cuts are that people like to have more money, but they also like to be able to see a GP, and they want their kids to get educated in a school that's not falling down. And it's all of these services that ultimately don't have as much money when you cut tax.
Oh, exactly. It's like, you know, we've got crumbling public services.
I think that's the point, though. Like, even with the kind of higher tax burden, we've still got those crumbling public services. So I think a lot of people are going to think, well, you know what, right or wrong way, they're going to think, well, that money's obviously not, you know, it's not doing any good in the government's pocket because the government's, you know, not improving at both, you know, north and south of the border. They don't seem to be improving public services. So I think people are just going to say that cash is better in my wallet than it is in Shona Robinson's wallet or you know, Jeremy Hunt. So I think
here's the question. Here's the real thing, Dougie. I mean, is it going to make any difference at all to the Tories' election chances? They clearly think this is going to be the springboard to the revival, to maybe hold on to power. But you know, they already cut NI by 2p earlier this year. Didn't make any difference in the opinion polls that I could see. Why would it be any different this time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to make any difference, Paul, at all. And I think partly, as I said earlier, Jeremy Hunt's, I think, a serious guy. You might not like him, you might not rate him, but I think he's a serious politician. I felt the budget was actually quite cautious, considering it was effectively an election budget. It'd been easy for him to, you know, slash across the board. But ultimately, I think the problem is, you know, 14 years now, I think people are just want something different. You know, we've had outside, you know, Jeremy Hunt's been handed a tough deck to deal with. You know, he's been handed a two and a seven, and his opponent's got two aces. So, in some ways, no matter what he'd done, he was always going to be on to a loser. So,
It didn't really matter what he did in that budget. Yeah, I kind of feel like enough voters have made up their minds about this government.
And I just think policies right now are just going out the window. I think people just want something different, and it doesn't really matter who it is. And ultimately, the legacy of you know, Liz Truss, of Boris Johnson, are going to play a much bigger part in this election than the legacy of Rishi Sunak or Jeremy Hunt. And I don't think there's anything Jeremy Hunt could have done yesterday that was really going to change that. And I think that's partly why he made that North Sea oil decision, because, let's say, it would have been easier for him. So his life had been so much easier just to say, you know, we'll end the windfall tax when we said we would. And he's decided the prudent thing to do would be to push it on. I personally think it's going to make any difference.
He's living in the shadows of his predecessors. I mean, you're right. I mean, I think that this election, people will be thinking about Boris, they'll be thinking about Liz Truss. And John, I mean, the Tory pitch, or Sunak's pitch, seems to be, well, I'm in charge now, I'm in the front seat, I've got the car on the road again, it's in the right direction. But then voters are just going to say, well, it was you guys that put it in the ditch in the first place. And you're actually expecting credit? I mean, if you go back to the child benefit issue that you raised, the Tories almost want praise for fixing something, fixing a problem that they were the architects of. They created that devilishly complex, unfair system where you lost it all once you earned 50 grand. And now they want us to pat them on the backs for fixing it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the thing about Rishi, I don't think that even your really staunch Conservative supporters particularly like him, because they don't really think he's a proper Conservative. His whole pitch is, I'm a sensible guy and I've steadied the ship and I'll do sensible things, not like Liz Truss and Boris Johnson. But, you know, the problem with that is that it's not going to please anyone, because you've got Keir Starmer, who is also clearly a sensible guy, who's not going to do anything particularly radical and who's got a reputation for being a good manager of things. And I think, like Douglas said, you know, people want a change, and why would you go for Rishi over Keir Starmer? I think the tax cut would be different if they were cutting tax now, and that was in the face of an opposition. Say, imagine Jeremy Corbyn, who was saying, "I am going to increase taxes specifically on high earners, and I'm going to spend hundreds of billions of pounds rebuilding public services." Then people would have something to really think about. But as it is, people know this is a giveaway. The Labour Party have been falling over themselves to make clear that they are not a tax and spend party, that they're not opposed to tax cuts, that they're going to be prudent and really do all the things that the Conservatives are saying that they'll do. But the problem for the Conservatives is they've now got such a horrific track record of failure.
So I'm going to ask you both the same question. It's the timing of the next general election. I've got to be honest with you, a May general election scares the shit out of me. I'm just not mentally prepared for jumping on that treadmill yet. Dougie, what do you think? May, or is it going to be October, November?
I think it might be May. I do. I just think if this, you know, if the immediate reaction to this budget doesn't turn around the Tories' fortunes, and by turnaround, we would need to have the most spectacular turnaround in fortunes probably in British political history. It feels like there's real parallels with the kind of, you know, last days of the John Major government, where a lot of the issues weren't of John Major's making, but he was having to deal with them. There was something fresh on offer. I mean, you know, Keir Starmer's no Tony Blair, but he's a nice, boring middle manager. And as I say on this show every week, people like their politicians to be boring. And I think especially now after the last few years. So I think once the dust settles in this, I think the Tories might look at it and think this can probably only get worse for us. And they might turn around and decide it's best to rip the band-aid off now then leave it kind of festering and until the autumn.
John, snap election?
I mean, I'm going to say the end of the year, simply because I just, yes, I think that Rishi Sunak will be well aware of the fact that things could get worse, but equally, I think he's aware of the fact that he is going to lose at the moment, and so he's potentially really got nothing to lose by leaving it a bit longer and seeing if maybe you get a bit of an economic uptick, seeing if maybe these tax cuts do something to the polls, seeing if maybe Keir Starmer's issues with the Muslim vote get worse, and that, you know, that things start to fall apart a bit for the Labour Party there. So I, you know, maybe I'm going to look really daft within the next couple of days, but I would say sort of October, November time. I think the really interesting question here is, does Rishi Sunak know when the next general election is going to be right now? Because I suspect not. I think that he's probably as torn about this as anyone else. He probably genuinely doesn't know whether he should call one now or see whether another, you know, 8 months can make any difference. He's kind of it must feel like he's on hiding to nothing, and it's, you know, the best of two bad options for him.
I just feel like the problem with them waiting is that this is a government that just is incapable of getting any momentum. Something always comes up to derail them, some fresh scandal, and it just, you know, they've got their media grids, the messages they want to put out, the policies they want to promote, and they just end up chasing their tail. I think they might just be better cutting and running, frankly, trying to frame the election on so-called economic progress and the apparent tough action they're taking on immigration, try to frame it around those two issues. But I think that the end result will be Starmer and Downing Street. I really do. So just to wrap things up, good week, bad week, starting with you, Dougie.
Yeah, I'm in more comfortable ground here bashing the SNP. So for bad week, I'm going to go for Angus Robertson, who released his latest independence paper. I think Damp Squib is an insult to Damp Squibs. No one sees it, seems particularly interested anymore. And I realise there's an irony in me bringing it up here while saying no one's interested in it. But I couldn't resist a wee dig at Angus. It's been completely, you know, it's a defence paper, defence of independent Scotland, and it's already been completely torpedoed by, you know, many, many experts who I've
good
told
metaphor.
Us.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, I've been waiting all week to use that one, Paul. So, I mean, just like all the other independence prospectuses, it's pretty much been torn apart. It's a complete waste of taxpayers' money. It's just to throw red meat at the you know, the SNP's core support. And I think no one's in the least bit interested what Angus Robertson has got to say on a Scottish Defence Force. For good week, I'm going to go for every single one of us who are even remotely interested in politics, because if Keith Brown gets his way, we might not have SNP MPs at Westminster causing just, well, making a fool of themselves, making it a fool of Scotland. This is obviously his plan or idea that he set out in the Sunday Herald, where he suggested that the SNP should perhaps look at non-participation at Westminster, similar to Sinn Féin. He quickly backtracked on it, and I don't think Humza Yousaf was very happy with him for saying it. You know, vote SNP if they have an MP that doesn't turn up and actually represent you. I don't think it's the best tagline going into.
But take the salary.
Yeah, oh, of course, absolutely take the salary. I don't think that's a great tagline to put in your election leaflets, but I think I speak for everyone when I say, you know, Westminster with the SNP there would be a much better place.
John, over to you. Good week, bad week?
So I'm going to go for George Galloway. He's had a good week.
Oh, God.
Obviously won the by-election. He's back in Parliament, representing Rochdale for the third time with his third party. He's like, whether you like him or not, and I get the impression that you don't.
It's a not from me.
He is a problem for Labour. He's a pretty formidable auditor, whether you like what he's saying or not. And he's got a load of ammunition in that he's there in one single issue, and that's Labour's failure to call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. That's a position that looks increasingly indefensible for the Labour Party, and it's one that a lot of their core Muslim voters are really and understandably furious about. So, you know, is it going to swing the election? I doubt it, but it's not what the Labour Party would have wanted at all. Sounds like a bad week. I'm going to go for Rishi Sunak. He did this televised interview with Grazia magazine with his wife. The idea was obviously that he wanted to try to look like a human being. Unfortunately, that wasn't something he was capable of doing. The pair of them spoke about rearranging dishwashers and doing things to tables in the style of people that didn't know what a dishwasher was and had never laid a table. Kind of looked like he might have been some sort of Rishi AI bot that we're seeing interviewed rather than the Prime Minister.
Sounds like the worst interview in the history of journalism. There is no way I'm digging that out. Rishi Sunak talking about a dishwasher.
Yeah, I mean, it was like an epic fail.
Oh, well, I mean, it's like those interviews that Gordon Brown used to give when he was Prime Minister. It just looked so artificial and fake. And look what happened to Gordon.
It's always a dangerous thing, isn't it? Remember, who was it? David or Ed Miliband that he did the interview in his kitchen, but then he let slip that he had two kitchens in his London townhouse, and he caught it in the neck for that. And when Rishi tried to seem normal by filling a car with petrol, he didn't know how to fill a car with petrol. It's best, I think, that Conservative ministers, or maybe ministers in general, just accept that they're not good at being humans.
Yeah, I mean, the public think that politicians are weirdos. You know, don't try and be something you're not, which is normal. It's just not going to wash.
And don't eat bacon sandwiches. And
don't eat bacon sandwiches, absolutely. All right, that's great. Thank you, chaps. Thanks to Dougie and thanks to John again for this budget special. Please join us again next week. Who knows, we might be talking about an impending general election. I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
It's important we look at the facts.
Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.